Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for April 21st, 2009. I'm Annalisa Van Hook. In this episode, we'll discuss mTOR signaling, which is the topic of a science signaling focus issue released this week, with Michael Yaffe, our chief scientific editor. Dr. Yaffe spoke to me on the phone from his lab at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Welcome, Dr. Yaffe.
Good to be here.
This week, Science Signaling is publishing a special issue on mTOR, the mammalian target of rapamycin. Why focus on mTOR signaling now? I mean, what's going on in the field?
There have been a number of important breakthroughs in the last 2 years that I think have dramatically changed the way that we think about mTOR signaling. The most important aspects of the new finding relate to the activities of two different mTOR complexes known as mTORC1 and mTORC2. And it appears now that this kinase, which was traditionally associated with cell growth and proliferation in response to various nutrients, now is likely to play important roles in events as disparate as cancer cell initiation and the innate and adaptive immune responses. In addition, there has recently been the discovery of inhibitors of the mTOR kinase domain rather than the traditional inhibitor that has been used to study mTOR signaling, and that is the immunosuppressant rapamycin.
So mTOR is a kinase, and it forms two different complexes. You mentioned mTORC1 and mTORC2. How are these two complexes different, and do they have different effects when they signal?
They do. So there are two different mTOR complexes. One is called mTORC1, and one is called mTORC2, and they fulfill different functions in the cell. So the mTORC1 complex, which is the one that has historically been known to be inhibited by rapamycin, functions primarily in controlling ribosome biogenesis, protein synthesis, autophagy, and protein translation. And this complex of mTORC1 is a complex of the catalytic subunit, mTOR, together with several other subunits, including a small GTPase called Rheb, an adapter protein called Raptor, an AKT target known as Pras40, and an adaptive subunit which goes by the name of either Gable or LST8. And this complex is the complex that is inhibited by rapamycin and is the complex that seems to be responsive to nutrients such as amino acids. The second complex, which is called mTORC2, is a complex between the same catalytic subunit, mTOR, together with proteins like RICTOR, Gable, also known as MLST8, SYN1, and a new component called ProTOR. And this mTORC2 complex appears to function downstream of the PI3 kinase pathway and appears to be specifically involved in the activation of the AKT pathway through the direct phosphorylation of proteins like AKT and PDK1.
In terms of cell physiology, how does signaling from mTORC1 differ from signaling through mTORC2?
Here's where the pathway becomes quite fascinating, because the pathways are distinct, but they're tightly interconnected. So the mTORC1 pathway is the one that controls, to a large extent, cellular growth, protein translation, the creation of new ribosomes, and the suppression of the autophagy pathway. And it's this idea of the mTORC1 pathway being required for cells to proliferate through the actions of cyclin D and for cells to continue to grow, that's made it such a good target for molecules like rapamycin, an immunosuppressive agent originally identified as a bacterial product that has widespread use in clinical medicine as an immunosuppressant agent. The mTORC2 complex seems to play an equally important role in regulating proliferation and cell survival, but it does this by acting upstream of molecules like PDK1 and its downstream targets, which include kinases like AKT, protein kinase C, and SGK, otherwise known as serum glucocorticoid-induced protein kinase. So the interesting thing is that the mTORC2 complex, by activating AKT, in turn activates the mTORC1 complex. The mTORC1 complex, acting through S6 kinase, negatively feeds back on PI3 kinase to inhibit the mTORC2 complex. So we have a fascinating feedback loop here in which one of the mTORC complexes stimulates the other while the other inhibits the first. So it's a classic case of combining a positive and negative feedback loop in order to regulate so many of the diverse functions that are catalyzed by the catalytic subunit of both complexes, in this case mTOR.
So mTOR participates in two complexes that we know of, mTORC1 and mTORC2. Are there additional mTORC complexes out there just waiting to be discovered?
It's an excellent question, and several pieces of data suggest that there may be a third mTOR complex that has not yet been identified. We know, for example, that in addition to phosphorylation of downstream kinases of mTOR on both the T loop, that is the so-called activation loop that has to be phosphorylated in order for kinases to typically acquire their at most active form, there is also a hydrophobic motif on several of the kinases that lie downstream of mTOR, and mTORC2 specifically phosphorylates that hydrophobic motif. In addition to those two motifs, there's a third sequence known as the TURN motif on a number of these kinases whose phosphorylation seems to stabilize the kinase in its active conformation. Several studies suggest that phosphorylation of this TURN motif, which lies upstream of the hydrophobic motif, also lies downstream of the kinase activity of mTOR. Intriguingly, the TURN motif contains serine proline or threonine proline sites that one would typically associate with phosphorylation by proline-directed kinases, such as MAP kinases or cyclin-dependent kinases. And this has led to the suggestion that there may be a third mTOR complex that either phosphorylates these sites directly on SP or TP sites, or a third complex that activates an alternative proline-directed kinase or inactivates a phosphatase in order to stimulate the phosphorylation of this TURN motif and stabilize these mTOR-activatable complexes in their high-activity form.
mTOR was originally identified based upon the fact that it's inhibited by a bacterial product called rapamycin.
That's correct.
So you mentioned that rapamycin inhibits mTORC1, but it doesn't affect mTORC2?
It depends on the dose and the duration of treatment. Acute inhibition of cells with rapamycin suppresses the activity of mTORC1, but this in turn increases the activity of the PI3 kinase AKT pathway. And consequently, in short-term treatment with rapamycin, one sees an activation of pathways downstream of AKT. In long-term treatment with rapamycin, in which the amount of mTOR in the cell is downregulated, one can then see inhibition of the mTORC2 complex. In addition, it also depends on the cell type that's used. So a classic readout that people have used for rapamycin-mediated inhibition of the mTORC1 complex is the phosphorylation of downstream targets like S6 kinase and 4EBP1, a component of an inhibitor of the translational machinery. However, it's now clear that rapamycin can differentially affect the phosphorylation of these two targets depending on how long the cells are treated with rapamycin and depending on which cell line is examined. For example, a study that was reported last year in Proceedings of the National Academy of Science showed that in cultured cells, the phosphorylation of 4EBP1 was initially inhibited, but that it recovered within a few hours despite the continued presence of rapamycin and the continued suppression of the target S6 kinase.
We've been talking about this inhibitor of mTOR, rapamycin, and there's been a lot of work lately to develop new inhibitors of mTOR signaling for potential clinical applications. Before we start talking about the inhibitors, could you just tell us a little bit about the clinical implications of mTOR signaling? So what sort of physiological processes or diseases it's involved in?
The mTOR pathway is involved in a wide range of cell physiological responses that include immune-mediated reactions and cell growth. Consequently, the early studies on rapamycin focused largely on the observed effects of rapamycin on suppressing the adaptive immune system. That is, it was observed that when T cells were treated with rapamycin, there was a suppression of proliferation. And this was used clinically, and still is, in the treatment of patients following organ transplantation and occasionally in patients with autoimmune disorders. However, the recognition that the mTOR pathway played an important role in cell autonomous growth and that numerous oncogenic mutations which activated PI3 kinase signaling in human cancer most likely worked at least in part through the stimulation of mTOR activity suggested that mTOR itself might be a useful target in regulating tumor cell growth. Consequently, there is a strong rationale for developing rapamycin and other mTOR inhibitors for use in oncology. Currently, rapamycin is in several clinical trials, as well as a rapamycin analog known as temsirolimus that was recently approved for treating advanced stage renal cell cancer. So far, however, rapamycin has not proven effective as a single agent, and it appears to have only limited utility when combined with other agents based on analysis of the clinical data so far. This suggests that rapamycin either alone or in combination with other chemotherapeutic agents may not live up to its potential as an anti-tumor therapy.
So are people then trying to develop additional mTOR inhibitors that would have slightly different activity or a wider range of activity from rapamycin? Or are they looking at trying to develop inhibitors that inhibit mTOR signaling mechanistically very differently from the way that rapamycin does?
Absolutely. With the discovery of multiple complexes involving the catalytic subunit mTOR, it became apparent that inhibiting mTORC1 using rapamycin may not achieve the goal of suppressing the activity downstream of PI3 kinase because of the presence of the mTORC2 complex. And this suggested that direct chemical inhibitors of the kinase domain, inhibitors of mTOR itself, might prove to be more effective in suppressing oncogenesis or tumor growth. And this has turned out to be true. At least two academic laboratories, as well as several companies, now have small molecule inhibitors of the mTOR kinase domain, and these are likely to prove more efficacious in the treatment of human cancer.
Because mTOR signaling is important in so many contexts in the body, because it's such an important part of the physiology of most cell types, how much concern is there about having side effects, say, in the immune system when you're using an inhibitor of mTOR signaling to treat cancer, for example?
I think that that's a really important problem that has yet to be addressed. As I suspect most of our listeners are aware, the immune system plays an important role in tumor clearance and tumor suppression. And so although inhibiting the mTOR complex may suppress the growth of the tumor cell or the ultimate emergence of cancer, it is likely to also suppress the adaptive arm of the immune system and result in less clearance of tumor cells. And so part of the limited effect that has been observed with mTOR inhibitors so far may be due to the fact that while we suppress the primary tumor, we also suppress the arm of the immune system that's involved in anti-tumor responses. And so ideally, one would like to be able to have a targeted therapy in which one could specifically inhibit the mTOR pathway within the tumor cell while sparing other aspects of patient physiology, such as the immune system.
Putting aside for a moment this concern of having effects in non-target tissues in using mTOR inhibitors for treatment, what have researchers found in terms of how effective it might be to inhibit mTOR signaling in tumors?
There were several very interesting studies that were recently published, some in Science Signaling, that has suggested that mTOR inhibition in a tissue-specific manner may prove to be very advantageous. The Pandolfi lab, for example, studied the emergence of prostate cancer in mice upon conditional deletion of P10, the lipid phosphatase that counteracts the action of PI3 kinase. That laboratory made the astonishing observation that deleting both P10 and mTOR in prostate epithelium was sufficient to completely suppress tumor initiation, whereas the deletion of mTOR alone in the unaffected prostatic epithelium appeared to have no negative effect on normal prostate function. And this suggested that if we could come up with a tissue-specific inhibitor of mTOR, that is, if we could target the mTOR inhibition to the tumor of interest rather than all of the organ systems in the body, that mTOR inhibition might prove to be a very viable strategy. Alternatively, it may be that specific inhibitors of the mTORC2 complex would be more advantageous than a non-specific mTOR inhibitor that was tissue-targeted. For example, by deleting RICTOR, a key component of the mTORC2 signaling complex, in a mouse model of prostate cancer, the Sabatini lab was able to specifically suppress tumor initiation. Again, RICTOR deletion had no deleterious effects on the normal prostatic tissue in that model system, suggesting that if one could devise a specific inhibitor of the mTORC2 complex, it would likely prove quite effective in suppressing tumor initiation or tumor growth, while likely having only a limited effect on other aspects of normal physiology.
How are people thinking about trying to target mTOR inhibitors to specific tissues? I mean, are they thinking about trying to develop drugs that would target some part of mTOR signaling that's restricted to tumor cells, or are people thinking more about targeted drug delivery to the tumor cells?
I think both strategies are viable. One approach is to target the inhibitor in such a way that it is only taken up by the cells of interest. This was used in order to target rapamycin to dendritic cells in a recent paper examining the effect of mTORC1 complex on immune regulation. In that case, rapamycin was encased in microparticles, which enabled them to be selectively taken up by dendritic cells and macrophages. And in that case, it was possible to study the effect of mTOR signaling in only that specific cell type. In tumor cells, one could make use of tumor-specific antigens in order to find ways to encourage tumor cells to take up specific encapsulated forms of mTOR inhibitors. An alternative approach would be to ask whether or not tumor cells show a preferential sensitivity to mTORC2 inhibition compared to normal cells, and in that case, perhaps targeting mTOR along with a second agent, such as an EGFR inhibitor or a PI3 kinase inhibitor, might also prove to be quite advantageous. One of the great conundrums in trying to develop better and more specific inhibitors of the mTOR complexes is the fact that at the moment we do not have high-resolution X-ray structures of either the mTORC1 or the mTORC2 complex. And clearly, this data is critical in order to develop inhibitors that specifically target one complex or the other. As most of our readers are aware, rapamycin works not by direct binding to the mTOR catalytic subunit itself, but instead by binding to FKBP12, an allosteric regulator of the mTORC1 complex. In a similar way, if one had a better understanding of the structural basis by which RICTOR or SYN1 interact with the mTOR catalytic subunit in the mTORC2 complex, one could potentially modulate that specific interaction using drugs that would specifically inactivate the mTORC2 complex while having perhaps only a limited effect indirectly on the activity of the mTORC1 complex.
Okay, so that's how people are thinking about targeting mTOR inhibitors to cancer cells. But as you mentioned earlier, mTOR also plays a prominent role in the immune system. Are people looking at using mTOR inhibitors to treat diseases of the immune system?
Absolutely. This is, as our readers are well aware, the traditional area in which mTOR inhibition has been studied. But most of that has focused historically on the effects of rapamycin on the clonal expansion of lymphocytes. A series of four recent papers has now indicated that mTOR signaling also plays an important role in the innate immune system, specifically in the activity of terminally differentiated macrophages and dendritic cells in signaling responses downstream of toll-like receptors. Intriguingly, the response of these innate immune cells to inhibition of the mTOR pathway is exactly opposite of what one would have expected based on mTOR signaling in the adaptive immune system. It appears that in dendritic cells, suppression of mTOR signaling results in a pro-inflammatory phenotype due to an alteration in the production of cytokines, so that there is less IL-10 signaling, which is generally thought to be an inhibitor of inflammatory signaling, and increased amounts of IL-12, a pro-inflammatory cytokine. Consequently, when rapamycin is administered, it appears that there is an increase in the activity of the innate immune system that suppresses the proliferation of parasites and intracellular bacteria. Thus, when patients are administered rapamycin, we both suppress the adaptive immune system but increase the innate immune system. And in this way, one arrives at the unexpected result that rapamycin or other mTOR inhibitors could actually be used to boost the innate immune response to things like bacteria and parasites. In addition, this may also explain the clinical observation that patients who were treated for a long period of time with rapamycin in order to suppress the immune system occasionally develop an unexpected inflammation in other organ systems such as the lungs and kidneys. However, this increase in the innate immune response to bacteria and parasites is counterbalanced by what appears to be a suppression in the ability of rapamycin-treated cells to fend off viral infection. It appears that when dendritic cells are treated with rapamycin, they produce considerably less interferon alpha and interferon beta after exposure to viruses, suggesting that rapamycin may have a deleterious effect on the ability of a patient's immune system to fend off viral infections.
Is there any way that people are thinking about trying to target rapamycin to the innate versus to the adaptive immune system?
Yes, that's a very interesting idea. One possibility would be to use specific targeting approaches in order to deliver mTOR inhibitors to a specific subset of the innate immune system cells. For example, the use of encapsulated forms of rapamycin that require phagocytosis for their uptake might specifically be useful for targeting dendritic cells and macrophages while sparing T cells from the immunosuppressive effects of these inhibitors.
It sounds like researchers will be pretty busy for some time to come developing new inhibitors and new ways to use them.
I think that this pathway, which has been studied intensively for at least a decade, is likely to see an even greater resurgence in scientific investigation over the next 4 to 5 years. And I think that the development of both mTORC1 and mTORC2 specific inhibitors, as well as global inhibitors of the mTORC kinase domain, are likely to cast a lot of light on signaling pathways which have otherwise remained, at least in part, shrouded in mystery. I think that we're in for a very exciting time in our understanding of the mTOR pathway, both from the perspective of basic science and from the perspective of clinical application.
Thank you for speaking with me, Dr. Yaffe.
Thank you very much, Dr. Van Hooks, for the invitation.
That was Science Signaling's Chief Scientific Editor, Michael Yaffe, talking about mTOR signaling, the topic of this week's Science Signaling focus issue. In this special issue, you'll find four perspectives about mTOR signaling. The first, by Gertin and Sabatini, discusses pharmacological inhibitors of mTOR signaling and their potential clinical uses. The second perspective, by Janes and Fruman, concerns the effects of the mTOR inhibitor rapamycin in the immune system. And the third, by Vogt and Hart, addresses mTOR signaling and the AKT kinase in the context of glioblastoma, a type of brain tumor. The last perspective, by Alessi and colleagues, discusses recent findings about the biochemistry of signaling through mTORC2. And finally, an editorial guide by Nancy Goff provides an overview of the perspectives included in this special issue. Over the past few months, Science Signaling has published several research articles about signaling through mTOR. In the January 27th issue, there were three articles related to mTOR signaling. First, Nardella and colleagues described results from experiments addressing the effect of inhibiting mTOR signaling on prostate cancer. This issue also included a report by Fan and co-workers on mTOR signaling and glioma, the same report highlighted in the perspective by Vogt in the focus issue. The January 27th issue also included a paper by Marshall and colleagues on GTPase activity upstream of mTOR. On March 17th, Science Signaling published a research article by Wong and co-workers about how signaling through AKT and mTOR may play a role in obesity-induced cardiovascular disease. That wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, the Science Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for joining us.